section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting, one show at a time.
You are about to enter the dirty stalls of It Burns When I Pee. This podcast is for mature audiences only. The views and opinions expressed on this show are usually rude, crude, and offensive, and should not be associated with our guests and sponsors in any way. Please proceed to the first available stall and prepare for takeoff.
Welcome, everyone, to another gripping episode of It Burns When I Pee, the number one podcast for roots music, adult comedy, and interviews. The podcasting god, Blake Clayton, along with his revolving group of co-hosts, are preparing for launch. Please adjust your volume, remove all morals and values, and prepare yourself for what we like to call auditory dysentery. We go live in
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
Mission control to podcasting god, you are clear to proceed. I repeat, you are clear to proceed.
Alright folks, welcome back to the Dirty Stalls of It Burns When I Pee, episode 122, and it's been many, many, many episodes since we had this man on, the original dirty old one-man band, Scott H. Byram. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. What's up?
I looked it up. It was episode 4, back in August of 2007, and it's just been way too long, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show again.
My pleasure to be back.
So,
up with your emails and stuff.
Awesome. The new album that you have come out, Nothing But Blood, it comes out on February 4th, and it's your 9th release that you've had, and it's your 5th with Bloodshot. How do you think that you have grown musically since those first independent releases?
Well, I like to think my songwriting's gotten better. I know my head's got wrapped around the music business a little bit more since I got signed. But, you know, I started from the ground up booking myself and managing myself and recording my own records for years, and then before I got signed and stuff. So it's been a long road, but I don't know. The road itself is not as mysterious as it used to be either.
Right. You're just a seasoned veteran now, right?
I guess so. Seasoned with my liver is seasoned, that's for sure.
Right. So you recorded some of this album at home. What are some of the advantages to being able to be in the home environment while you're recording some of this stuff?
Well, actually, I recorded some of this at somebody else's studio and a lot of it at my studio, and that actually made it concrete why I like recording in my own house so much. It's all about freedom, you know. Like I can experiment. I don't feel like I'm stepping on anybody's toes and wasting anybody's time or using up the time that we've paid for.
Sure.
You know, it's really my own little world that I get into there. I always end up looking pretty rough. I'll be in my pajamas from, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning until I go to bed the next morning. Because I just lock myself in there, and my pencil hair grows all out, and I lose my mind a little bit. If I decide to go out and go to a bar or something at the end of the day, and I'm having to talk to people, it's like, I don't know, I feel really strange, man. It's like I've been disconnected from society for a while, and the people are talking to me, and I'm like, this is so weird.
So when you're in the recording mode, I mean, does that kind of take over your whole world? Is you really get focused and you spend a lot of time in there?
Yeah, man, I'll be in there for, you know, 10 or 12 hours a day. Wow. for weeks at a time, you know, and then I'm on the road so much. So, like I'll be in the studio all that time, and then I'll just hit the road and go, and then I'll come back, and I'll have to get back in the studio again. And it's, you know, I'm just kind of locked into business mode or
awesome
music mode or whatever. But it's kind of like for people that can't stop playing video games, I'm that way with the studio.
Yeah, you start playing a video game, and 5 hours later, you look up and you're like, "Oh my God, what happened?"
Seriously, man, I'll be talking to somebody on the phone. They'll be like, "Hey, I'm going to come by. You want to go to lunch?" I'll be like, "Okay." And they'll be like, I'll be over there in about 45 minutes. And I'll be trying to fix one little thing. And all of a sudden, they're walking in my door. And I'm like, "I thought you said 45 minutes." I said, "It's been an hour and a half."
So there's a huge spectrum of music styles on the new album, you know, from songs like Church Point Girl to When I Die. Everything from blues, gospel, and even, you know, the metal edge to it. What style is kind of your favorite to perform?
Oh, probably the metal, man. I like rocking out, but I really like I think my favorite stuff to play is kind of my hybrid kind of music. You know, like on the last record, Victory Song and stuff.
Yep.
So it's kind of like driving blues, but it has a little bit of rock in there.
Sure.
and has some good guitar solos and everything. That's the kind of stuff where I really, you know, get a lot of satisfaction out of. But you know, I like playing everything.
Sure.
Getting older now, it's starting to feel like the first five or six songs of the show, I'm looking at the clock going, "Oh shit, I still got an hour left." But then after about 10 or 15 minutes, the adrenaline takes over and I start having a good time. It's all the pain goes away.
Awesome. You know, as an artist, you put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into an album, and it kind of becomes part of you for the rest of your life. Can you describe what Nothing But Blood is as an album means to you?
Yeah. You know, it's like I do one record, and I'm writing, and I record, and then the next, that one starts getting a little bit of in the background, and it's just, I just feel it inside, it's time to record another record, and generally I don't go into it thinking of some kind of, you know, theme or anything like that. It's just a way to get the songs that I've been playing live, recorded, as in like a record of what I was doing at the time.
Sure.
You know, I don't want it to slip into the past and not be recorded every once in a while, you know. Well, actually, pretty much every record has one or two songs on it that has been kind of in the can for 6 years or more, and it's just because I keep putting it off, and I'm like, well, shit, I gotta record this so that it doesn't get lost, you know, because there's plenty of songs that I've written over the years that have totally gotten lost, and I'll never hear them again.
Sure.
Or no longer play them or whatever.
So when you put out an album, these are songs that you've worked on for, you know, a while, and instead of just coming in and saying, oh, I need to put out a new album, I have to write all new songs.
Some of them I've been working on for a while. Some of them I record the day after I write it, you know?
Right.
I have songs that I write in like 5 minutes. Sometimes those are the best ones, you know? Especially like real early in the morning or when I can't sleep or something, and I get up and I go in the living room, pick up my guitar, or I'm just thinking of words, and I'm kind of stuck in that dream state still a little bit, and I just jot it down real fast in like 5 minutes, and a lot of the time that's enough to record the next day, you know.
Sure.
That's what I did on some of the older records, like on Going Home on Graveyard Shift. I wrote that the day before I recorded it.
Oh, wow.
I'm trying to think of any on this record that are like that. I don't have the record right in front of me. But also, you know, I almost have to close the floodgates when I'm in the middle of recording a record, because I've still got some songs coming to me. And if I let myself keep writing while I'm in the middle of recording a record, I'll feel obligated to record it and put it on that record.
Sure.
And I'm like, you know, I need to save that for the next one.
Right.
I've got plenty.
You got plenty of time too, so you don't have to do it all at once. You have like double albums every release.
Yeah, I mean, I've been putting out 13 or 14 songs on a lot of records for a long time.
Yeah.
And my older ones, when I was doing more covers and back when I was more of a, you know, just a singer-songwriter kind of thing, and not so much a one-man band, I was doing a lot of covers, you know, very few originals. Now it's kind of like, you know, once I got signed back in, what was that, 2005?
Sure.
I really made it, you know, a conscious effort to concentrate on my original songs and not just playing old Bluegelly and stuff like that.
Sure. You know, and one of the points you brought up, the one-man band, you know, I've noticed that there's a growing number of one-man bands that are releasing music. And why do you think that it's become so popular?
I don't know. I guess everybody gets tired of the overproduced bullshit, and they want to hear somebody like, you know, somebody projecting their spirit from the foundation without a bunch of, you know, bullshit in the way. Even though I'm doing it that way and trying, you know, to keep it simple and everything, I've also been, all these years, I've been trying to learn really good production techniques in the studio and everything, and, you know, it's all a learning process for me. So even though my stuff sounds rough, I'm I'm really trying to learn how to make it not sound rough. what I'm really trying to do is learn how to make it sound rough and produce at the same time.
Right.
But that's
a fine knob to turn.
Yeah.
So what made you decide to go the route of one-man band, you know, years ago?
It wasn't really a decision. It was kind of like I had some bands. I was in a couple of bluegrass bands that toured, and I was in a punk metal band, and I was doing this kind of singer-songwriter thing in the background, playing acoustic guitar and doing Dylan songs and Townes Van Zandt songs and Doc Watson songs and Led Belly and stuff. And when those bands broke up, I quit my job and just this is in like 2001, and I just started booking tours for myself. And,
sure.
You know, that started out in whatever kind of clubs, you know, or coffee shops and stuff like that. And I really didn't want to be in the coffee shops, and I didn't want to be known as a singer-songwriter, because one of my biggest pet peeves in the world is the sound of a bad acoustic guitar pickup. When people say folk festivals, that's the first thing I think of.
Right.
I don't really want to go to that. So I just, you know, after playing solo for a little while, I wanted to get back into those rock clubs, and I needed something to compete against the rock bands in order to be able to be allowed in those places.
Sure.
For shows. And so I just started adding amps and stomping my foot on things and experimenting and trying to be a little bizarre. And, you know, it just kind of evolved like that. I wasn't like inspired by another one-man band to become a one-man band. It wasn't like a decision, I'm going to be a one-man band. It was just kind of like
a natural progression.
Yeah, just how it happened.
Sure.
And really, I always say, I'm not really a one-man band. I'm just a guy with too many speakers.
There you go. So, you know, you spend a lot of time on the road. You're always touring. And like I said, you tour and record. Kind of that's all you're really doing. You know, when was the last time you took time off the road? And, you know, for what length of time do you usually take a break?
I used to say that the only time I ever get a break is when I actually break something. You know, I got like 3 months off when I broke my leg a few years back, but and I got a whole bunch of time off when I got hit by that truck.
Sure.
You know, it's really like the dead of winter and the scorching heat of the summer. Those are about the only times when I'm able to stay home for any amount of time, because the rest of the time are ideal for touring.
Sure.
And that's when the festivals are, and that's when the people are going to come out more. You can't tour in December and January. I mean, I've done it, but it's pretty dead when you try to do that. So,
sure.
You know, and so when I do have time off, it's always like when the weather's shitty or everybody in the world having a Christmas party I gotta go to.
Right.
So it's December's always very blurry too. Thanksgiving parties, Christmas parties, Christmas, New Year's. I got a bunch of friends with birthdays right around there. It just doesn't stop, man.
That's awesome. So what do you do if you're not playing music and you're not driving to the next gig? What are some things that you like to do to pass the time?
My favorite is probably camping, but I don't really get to do that nearly as much as I used to. I come from San Marcos, Texas, just down the road. I'm in Austin right now, and San Marcos is about 30 miles away, and that's where I grew up, and we got the beautiful San Marcos River there. Apparently it's the fastest growing city in America per capita or something like that. So I like to get down there and jump in the river and go swimming in the river in the summertime and drink beers with my old high school buddies. If I get a chance to go camping, man, that's probably where I'm going to be. I spend a lot of time when the weather's nice if I'm home, which is rarely. I spend a lot of time sitting on the porch swing. I got my old great-grandmother's porch swing hanging on the front porch, and I sit there and play guitar for an hour or two.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
Speaking of guitars, you use a number of different guitars on your live show. Like, how many guitars do you have, and which one would you say is your favorite?
I think I have 17 guitars now, which is crazy.
Wow.
My favorite is probably, you know, the one that everybody knows me for playing, that my old Gibson, my 59 Gibson.
Right.
It's, you know, my old trusty crusty. I mostly play my, I got a Martin acoustic, and I've had that since I was back in my bluegrass band, and I record a lot with that. I'm sponsored by Gibson now, so I probably shouldn't be saying that. but I do love my Gibson guitars. I do only play Gibson on stage, you know, not necessarily because I planned it out that way. It's just I really do love those guitars. But, you know, you want to ask me my least favorite guitar to play. It's probably my 12-string because I hate tuning that.
Oh, jeez. So, you know, with having 17 guitars, when you go out on a tour, I mean, how do you decide which one you're taking, or is it kind of based on what you're planning on playing during that tour, or do you just pick up a few and go with that?
No, I always bring the same four guitars with me on tour. Those are my tour guitars. A lot of the time they're still in the cases when they're here because I don't need to get them out. Occasionally I'll bring a fifth guitar, but we don't have much room in the van, man, so I don't really do that. Yeah, I have my hollow body 59, which is my main guitar. I have my Gibson Explorer, which is kind of the heavy metal looking one, I switch between those two mostly. And then I have a couple other ones that have like special tunings,
sure,
open tunings that I do slide stuff on, and those. I don't have to change the strings nearly as many times on those because I only play like two or three songs a show.
Sure. So what are a couple of your favorite venues across the country to play?
You know, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of great places I really like to go to. And there's a lot that have been my favorites over the years and I don't get to anymore. We always loved stopping in the Asbury Lanes and Asbury Park, New Jersey, the bowling alley. With they can do bowling while playing, so I can hear that echo again.
Oops, sorry.
But then that's okay. You know, I really love playing at the Tractor Tavern in Seattle, and that's mostly because it's probably my biggest draw is there. I love playing at the Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco. I really like playing in my old hometown at the Triple Crown. That's
sure.
That's a small joint, and it's going to move next year. And it was the first place I ever played a solo show in, and I was the first person to play there.
Oh, awesome.
And it used to be a massage parlor, the Tokyo Tan, before there.
Nice.
And I was telling the crowd what it used to look like inside there the other day.
That's awesome. Not that you have ever... Not that you ever were a customer, of course, right?
Oh, no. I made up a little song about it. I played it for everybody since it might be the last time I played at the Triple Crown. It said, I spent all my money down at the Tokyo Tan. I spent about $65. Man, that girl still gave a good tan.
Nice. So, who is the biggest influence in your life and why?
Oh, my grandfather, man. God bless him. He just had a fire in his house the other day.
Oh, jeez.
Fell asleep with the skillet on.
Oh, wow.
He used to take me fishing all the time, and he's just a good man in general, always doing things for others, and, you know, so he's my hero. But my dad really did a lot for my music. As a kid, he was just, you know, quizzing me on songs on the radio, and I was always going through his record collection. He took me to see Doc Watson in 1980 when I was 6 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I remember when we went to the record store the first time that I remember when I was like about three, 4 years old. I remember him buying a Lightning Hopkins record. And he probably listened to Lead Belly around the house. But, I mean, he listened to classic rock and country and all that other stuff, too. But you know, that's some stuff that really stuck with me was the Lead Belly and the Doc Watson.
Awesome. One of the last questions I have for you, you know, I mentioned it earlier about on the album, there's a lot of different spectrums of music, but also something that throughout your career and all your releases is there is that balance of the songs about everybody's evil side and songs about everybody's, you know, religious side. Everybody fights though that devil on one side and angel on the other, you know, throughout our days. Yeah. But for you, I mean, is that one thing that, you know, that inspires you to write those different kinds of songs? Is kind of like the experiences that you've had and the struggles that you've had to fight those demons and, you know, think about your mortality?
Yeah, I'm not thinking about my mortality so much. I'm just depressed. you know, there's a certain feeling of dissonance I have inside, and so it's a little painful, you know. And so singing and writing and playing is really me getting shit off my chest.
Sure.
And there's that echo again.
Sorry.
That's okay. I got a lot of craziness inside that I want to get off my chest, you know, and make myself feel better. I'm singing to make myself feel better. I might be singing dark things, but that's just to get it off my chest.
Sure.
and push out my chest.
Right.
And then the gospel stuff, you know, it's just because I like the sound of gospel music and I like the way it resonates and it has a feeling of rejoice and hope, you know. It's not because I'm particularly religious or anything. It's just, and also, people relate, you know. I mostly do the music for myself, but I also know that people relate to all that.
Sure.
Struggle and everything, I know other music has helped me get through things, and people tell me all the time that my music helps them get through things, and I think it's just a big circle, man.
Right.
Honestly, I don't think about it that much, you know, except for when I'm doing these interviews. I'm just moving right along.
Awesome.
It's like the Muppet movie.
Right, there you go. So the most important thing is at the end of the interviews is, where do folks go to get the new album and find out where you're on tour at?
The albums should be available definitely on my website, www.scottbyram.com. And, you know, Bloodshot gets it out on their website, on Amazon, on iTunes. It should be in your local independently owned record store. That's what Bloodshot to get their stuff distributed to is the more the mom and pop shops. And what'd you say? When am I going to be touring?
Can folks find your tour dates on your website too?
Definitely on my website and on my Facebook page, and that's really me talking all that shit on there. The tours, right now we got one planned with a band called Larry and His Flash.
Oh, yeah.
Oregon. We're going to be doing a co-bill tour across the west, down the west coast and across the southwest and up through the Midwest. And then I'm going to Scandinavia in May for a couple weeks.
Wow.
That'll be fun. And then we're going to be up through the Northeast and down the East Coast and across the South in June and so on and so forth. Keep on trucking.
Awesome. Well, Scott, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. I really enjoyed the new album, and let's not make it 6.5 more years before you come back.
Hey, yeah, man. Let's talk again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Take care, man. Adios.
about Jesus when I die. I'm gonna see my Lord one of these days. I'm gonna meet him up in heaven some old day. He's gonna free my soul, take away my sins, take away my sorrow, bring me to my friends. I done passed and gone. Yeah, we're gonna rejoice. We finally made it up to heaven. You know I heard his voice, I singing from on high.
Are you a blogger or a podcaster, or you're just not happy with your web hosts? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free site builder, and the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use the special coupon code Section 8686, you'll save 25% off your web hosting packages. What do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs.